So I'd like to introduce, I guess, our campaigns managers, Joshua Gay and Matt Lee.
Find a pocket.
We do wear clothes underneath.
We did.
You were supposed to.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Okay, good morning. This is our slideshow.
Yeah? So, I guess first off, we've never been here before in this capacity on this side of things. We're a campaigns team. How about that? All right. I think it's great that we have one, and we will have one, hopefully from now on. And it's only going to go from there. And Matt Lee was a webmaster of GNU.org for quite some time now. I don't know how long.
Years.
His voice is kind of groggy, so I'll be doing a lot of talking. He might sort of mime me or make fun of me while I do so, but he's good at that. I was a volunteer for the FSF for some years. I helped Richard when I was an intern here a few years back, edit his book, and both of us have sort of, you know, it's kind of a dream in some ways, you know, to be more involved in this and be able to do this from a day-to-day basis. And it's really been great. And we've been learning a lot. We've been learning how to campaign, civic actions, and Henry Poole, you know, got the ball rolling last year. And we're trying to keep it going. And I think we're doing an okay job. Have you heard of Defective by Design? Yeah? Okay, that's good. That's like a huge ratio. There's like, I don't know, 100 people here, and 90% of you at least have heard of us. So 90% of people in the world have heard of Defective by Design. It's awesome. Okay, so we're going to go through a few of our campaigns. And specifically, we're going to start out with one. I'll start the ball rolling about it. So last year, we found out that the BBC was launching their iPlayer. And Peter did a lot of great research to figure out exactly who in the organization was doing it. And it's a former Microsoft employee is one of the people who's behind it. And often what we do in campaigns is instead of, we want to eliminate all of DRM, which is a very big goal. But to do it, it's easiest to focus in on as narrow a target as possible sometimes. So we didn't just focus on the BBC or the BBC Trust. We focused on the corrupt individual within the BBC and said, look what they're doing. These former Microsoft employees who have been on stage in South America saying they're going to work, bring the BBC and Microsoft close together and move forward, you know, and they build this DRM system that runs on some versions of Windows XP and, you know, ship it out. And they speak nothing of it. Like, it's a completely normal thing. Like, it was wise spending. You know, this is a whole shift into digital distribution from the BBC, which is a pretty big news organization and media corporation. And all of a sudden, it plays on just a tiny fraction of people's machines, for one. But for two, for those whose machines it could play on, they have to give up freedom. They have to give up a lot of different user freedoms in order to use this. And along the way, in giving up those freedoms, they risk, you know, companies who traditionally use spyware installing that on their machine, giving up control of their machines. And this just wasn't acceptable. So we said, let's oust that individual. You know, that's the corrupt individual. Let's get rid of DRM and let's get rid of them. Or, you know, at least put pressure on them to fix it. And Peter was over there at the BBC Trust. At the time, it was just perfect timing, coincidence. We sent over some suits. He got signs printed and a whole crowd of people. But what's really cool about being a campaigns manager is that it's really about reaching out to people. So you pick a target, you pick an action, and it's a way for people to get involved, right? So if we said, help us eliminate DRM, you know, what would you do? It would be hard for you to necessarily participate in that. You could use stickers, you could do other things. But by giving these direct focused actions, it's a way to get participation, it's a way to bring the news media for specific events, it's a way to really focus our energy and our attention that allows us to have measurable results. We can measure how many people participated in that. That's really good feedback for us. We can improve upon that. We know how to reach out to more people for the next actions and the next events that we do. So this is sort of a little bit of how campaigning works. And as a result of reaching out, Matt Lee was in Manchester?
In Manchester, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll give it over to him to tell how that sort of came together.
Okay. My throat is really quite bad today, so excuse me if I kind of start coughing and spluttering and things. In Manchester, at the time I was a volunteer, and I heard that Peter was coming to London, and there's this big notion in the UK right now that people should get out of London, like everything's in London, and so they should move out of London and move to the north of England. And Manchester is the... Lovely. Manchester is their like intended target for the next big move to out of London. So I got a bunch of guys from the local like LUGs and the local BSD user group and some just like students and things. And we basically decided to go down to the BBC in the rain in yellow suits and just kind of stand there interrupting traffic for a bit because the BBC is set up on Europe's busiest bus route in Manchester. So you have like thousands of people an hour going past here every day. So we just stood out in the rain and got a lot of traffic to kind of honk for us for DRM. We encouraged children to hold up signs and generally kind of made it very difficult for people to enter the BBC without getting a flyer. Because, see, Manchester's quite small compared to London. So BBC Manchester's like an office building, regular office building, with like one set of steps. So really, it's kind of easy to block access. We didn't, you know, get a great deal of feedback from them. They refused to come and talk to us. It turns out that BBC Online, the news function, actually upstairs at this point, watching us out the window. They wouldn't speak to us. They refused to come down and talk to us. But we had a good day, and I think we raised a lot of issues with DRM. And out of that, we now have a user group in Manchester that just campaigns for free software. We meet once a month, and Rich is coming in May, so come and join us.
Yeah. And to add to that, I don't live in Manchester. I live here. But I sign up for the Manchester mailing list because they have really good discussions. They're all about activism, software freedom. They're addressing these issues. And, you know, I recommend that any of you might consider seeing if you can, you know, get onto that mailing list. Ask Matt, he can tell you how.
You can find it. It's Manchester Free Software. Just use your favorite search engine.
Yeah, and this is, you know, to add to that, you know, it may, he kind of, you know, brushed over that, that there's this, you know, group in Manchester that, you know, is there to talk about software freedom. Well, normally we don't see that. We see GNU Linux users groups. Sometimes they drop the GNU part of that more often than not. And that's just, you know, shows that the majority of the groups out there, they're not about activism or discussing freedom. They're really out there, you know, as just users in a practical sense, some more often than not, part-time systems administrators. And I don't mean to say that that's indicative of all of the people in all of these groups. It's just that's where the discussions are often heading more often than not these days. But they started this Manchester group, and there were people part of a GLOG locally, right?
Yeah.
And you know, they were able to take a good portion of that GLOG over into this new group of people who wanted to talk about software freedom, who wanted to talk about issues like DRM, who wanted to have active participation. So they're there. And, you know, we're hoping as we move forward and as we start working with the community, as we continue to give ways to participate, ways to, you know, give ourselves a voice, you know, outlets to the news, outlets to each other, that more and more of these groups will start to build. And, you know, we can't oversee that. We can't predict where it's going to happen or how it'll work. And, you know, but hopefully some of you can help make that happen with us. And, you know, seeing how Manchester did it and seeing how other groups like Binary Freedom in Boston are doing it, you know, there's some good models. And there's different ways it works. Some work better primarily as a mailing list with specific events. Others might take a different shape and form. So moving on. So this leads into another part about how we do a lot of our actions. Sort of the idea is, it's not cookie cutter per se, but we want to capture people's attention. So the yellow suits when we're at an action. Or, you know, a really funny image that has multiple meanings. And in this case, this was to draw people in to the fact that Amazon had launched a new DRM ebook reader called The Swindle. They call it by another name. It's easy enough to figure out, Kindle. But I prefer just to say The Swindle and not to give them any, you know, press by mentioning the real name. And this is another way that people could participate. So this draws people in, this image. You see it, you go, oh, that's funny. And then before you even read what it's about and our actions, there's a way for you to participate. How we give you a way to participate in this case is we immediately describe that you could go onto Amazon.com and you could tag products that had DRM and played on the Kindle as Kindle Swindle. And this was really effective. Actually, almost every couple days, people are posting, I can't even keep up with it at this point, to the Kindle Swindle discussion page for that tag, because every tag on Amazon then has a discussion thread and a description. So I got the ball rolling with a 200-word short piece describing it, basically, as I did in the blog post. And, you know, most people are there are arguing against it, against what I'm saying, or, you know, trying to be in defense. You know, they have a lot of empathy for authors and writers, and these companies that launch DRM, they play off of that. They really try to, you know, say, well, all the artists and all of the writers, they're all going to starve and die if we don't have DRM. And they're like, what? How could we be against DRM? No, this is a horrible campaign. And we're like, no, it doesn't work that way. But it takes a while, you know. So the more discussions we build, the more places we have these discussions, the more it starts to help work against the way they're pushing DRM, the way they're just, you know, making these statements or using language that is really misleading about how the situation really is. And another way to participate was another small campaign. So Netflix announced, we're doing a streaming DRM video. And we did a similar thing, catchy image, these little business cards. And then the first thing you can do is participate. If you happen to use Netflix, you can print out a sheet of these business cards or mini letters, cut them up, sign each one. Netflix works is it's a mail order system online. You say what DVDs you want, they mail them to your house. Most of you probably know that. But then you just mail them back. But what we had people do, and a lot of people did, was they put these little mini letters in there. A lot of people were really speculative. You know, they were like, well, what's that gonna do? You know, these poor warehouse workers, you know, there's been a special talking about, you know, how they have these terrible working conditions and things, and you know, you're just adding to their problems day to day. They're not gonna be able to affect this. Well, maybe they won't be able to make the change, right? But maybe somebody else will read it, for one. And for two, it's a way to get people to participate. That act of participating and talking about it and being able to do things helps to spread the campaign and the idea. But back to the effectiveness. Well, they actually have responded to us. They wrote back saying, you know, we read your letter. They didn't address the issues that we had. They suggested that we put further related type discussions to another place. But you know, that sort of, you start to realize, someone took the time to write that letter to us. They took the time to read this, and they're pouring in to all these distribution centers all over. Just because they're workers in the factory doesn't mean they're not people. We're reaching them. They're just people. They understand DRM, right? They may understand it a lot better than us. They probably know how this business works. So we're reaching to them, and we're reaching to their bosses. And we're getting responses. And it's a really easy action, you know? It takes almost no time. It's a distributed, great way to participate. Soon we're gonna be doing one for a love film. Somebody modified this letter, this mini letter, because we shared the template. And there's a similar service in the UK and in Germany. And they're doing the same thing. So we'll post that soon, at least the template, and hopefully we'll make it another pushed action. So, and then back to another big campaign. So the Boston Public Library, they have DRM audiobooks, ebooks, and videos. And this is actually, to me, one of the most interesting things that's happening right now, and that I think we're gonna make tremendous progress on. For about 2 years ago, we had a letter campaign complaining about this. We wrote to them. There was a little bit of correspondence. Other people wrote to them. Not a lot came from it. This time around, we took a different strategy. And what we said was, we're going to the BPL for a couple hours to pass out flyers. And, you know, our people sort of knew what to expect. They knew we were going to come in yellow suits. They knew that we were going to make a big fuss. And they didn't want this. They immediately started contacting us. Actually, on the sign-up page for this, a person from the BPL responded to the sign-up page in a comments about 6 or 7 times. I usually don't look to the sign-up page for comment threads. I had only checked it a couple days, and all of a sudden I was like, whoa, he's written us 6 comments. He wants us to post our argument for DRM underneath our action thing in his comments. He's like, please push this through. Please let me put my defense. And, you know, if he had addressed our issues, I might have, but he actually ended up talking about this idea of convenience. He said, DRM is inconvenient, I know. And I said, well, I don't care if it's convenient. If DRM was convenient, that would almost be worse for us, because more people would want to use it, right? I mean, we don't care necessarily why people are opposing DRM all the time. But we would prefer that they oppose it, you know, for user freedom. But it only helps that, you know, as a result of not respecting user freedom, it's harder for all these other things that they do understand better. such as moving it from one player to another, they can't do. That is a user freedom issue. They may call it a convenience issue, but that's not the point. So I didn't post it yet, but we you know, his reply is public, and it was posted elsewhere, and we're in this ongoing dialogue from the very beginning, from within hours of launching this action, saying that we were going to do it. We were immediately in a dialogue with the Boston Public Library, with the decision makers, with people who needed to defend their decisions. And they're not doing a good job, and they're doubting themselves, and they're talking about how DRM is bad right from the beginning, which is good for us. And it was a good turnout. How many people were there? About a dozen people or more, or almost 20 people total throughout the day. And we passed out hundreds of flyers, talked to a lot of people. We had a few local press agents come. And what I found out is at a small librarians conference at the Library Association of the City University of New York, which represents about 22 local schools, and then there were some international librarians in New York, you know, they had all heard about this. The first thing they did is many people would come up to me, how's it going at the BPL? So, you know, it's getting out there. This worked tremendously well. They want to know. And it's, you know, we'll see how it turns out. I think that we have a good chance. And one of the big reasons we have a good chance is one of the largest audiobook publishers, Random House, along with Penguin also, they said they are eliminating DRM on their audiobooks, except for one customer, Overdrive. Overdrive is the company that sells audio DRM to the Boston Public Library and most libraries. So we've eliminated it for all of you and the rest of the country, except for our library customers, because it's so lucrative. So now we can really point to them and say, you're the bottleneck. You're the market force that's preventing this. All the other audio ebooks and ebooks, or audio ebooks, are DRM-free, except for the ones you're purchasing. Hopefully that'll go well. That'll be this year. You'll find out how it goes. Hopefully in the next few months. We'll see. So I talked about, I'm going to hand it back over to Matt in just a minute, because I'm going to lose my voice if I keep talking. So we talked about this idea of participation. Well, you know, I'm going to take a step back. It's really been amazing. You know, I'm new to the FSF. I've come in. But we're in this really great time of growth. And we're really transforming into, you know, this focus on reaching out to people, you know, talking about user freedom. And how campaigns are shaping the organization as a whole and our activities and our ability to reach out to you, it's not just affecting our ability to eliminate DRM or to talk about Bad Vista or to talk about our PlayOG campaigns or how we are pushing forth the end software patents campaigns and all of that. It's not each of those individual things. What I hope, what I want to try to get across is that it's actually helping us as an organization as a whole. It's helping us focus in on other areas. How do we noticed because of Defective by Design that we had collected over 10,000 people, a very large percentage of which were clicking through, were actively participating. So then we looked at our other lists on FSF.org, just our normal correspondence, not for actions, not for events necessarily, and the number was really small. And that was kind of hard. And we're seeing all these people signing up for Defective by Design, all these people being active, and then we looked at the number of associate members. It was way smaller than sort of the active participants. And we realized that there's this disconnect, that we do a really great job at getting things out there to people, whether it's GNU, whether it's our campaigns. But then we don't do a good job of bringing everybody back in and keeping us all together and working, you know, as a membership organization, as an organization that works with everybody here. So So we took another approach. We took a similar approach to our fundraising efforts. Matt adapted the Creative Commons widget, and he made it a fundraising widget. And then people put up this fundraising widget on their blogs and all over, and it was great. And then our fundraiser ended. I don't know if Peter mentioned, it went pretty well. That ended, and we were like, well, everybody has these widgets. What do we do with them? And at the same time, we started to realize, you know, these lists, these are empty, these communications. The associate membership isn't about raising funds necessarily. Our real benchmark is the number of members, the number of people that we get to be talking with and getting ideas from and growing with. So we kept at it, and we made it a sign-up widget. Sign up for infofsf@gnu.org. And to keep that going, sorry.
You ruined it now.
I ruined it. To keep that going, you know, we've launched the free software supporter. You know, we're starting to, that isn't necessarily a campaigning activity. It's just a recap of every month of what we're doing, a way to give back to you as much as you're giving to us. And I think this is what's really exciting about what's to come in 2008. It's this interplay between working with our associate members and working as an organization as a whole at understanding that as a membership organization, and having that work as effectively and as well and with our campaigning efforts. And it's been really exciting, and you know, I'm really excited about this year. And I hope next year I can, you know, you won't really see a division between the two as much. We could talk about campaigns, we could talk about our activities, but you'll see this common synthesis. Most importantly, I'll hand it over to Matt, you'll see beautiful sites like Defective by Design that draw you in. You'll start seeing them as they are now on fsf.org. And
So I took the initiative with Peter like a month ago now, I guess, to look at our website and start to redo it. It's a bit brown. And like 5 years ago, brown websites might have been cool, I think, but you know, I get a lot of people saying, you know, why is it brown? So I got rid of the brown, and we have blue. We have like, you know, like gradients that are like Web 2.0 stuff and everything. And the website, I mean, it's still as it was. The content hasn't really changed that much for now, but we have this new homepage, and you know, it's quite graphical. And I think that in the past we've tended to be kind of quite plain looking with our websites, perhaps. You know, they tend to be more about information, less about, sorry?
Sure.
Yeah, we are. There we go, yeah. Yeah, so we have this new website. It's not perfect. If you have any feedback, I mean, other than it doesn't suck or something, don't yell at me, but see me afterwards or send us an email. The feedback's been pretty good, though. I mean, people seem to be quite, you know, getting into it. And there's this kind of quite a bold message on the front page there that, you know, it's like, this is the FSF, we are the FSF, and this big thing on the front page is the GNU operating system, and you know, giving that a bit of a facelift too. There we are.
Yeah, and not just the facelift. I mean, notice how, I mean, pretend for a moment that you know nothing about free software or user freedom, and try to remember our old site. You know, it's a deluge of information, all sorts of things happening. But it doesn't focus you in on the important part, right? It doesn't focus you immediately in on freedom. This one, you know, gives this, you know, if you pass this to your friend who's a little bit, you know, not sure about free software, they're not super techie, maybe they're not even all that comfortable on the web yet. I think this is a lot more appealing to most people. And we're at this really great phase in the free software movement, you know, in the world right now, where everyday people are asking, what is free software? They're coming to it from one angle or another. But they want to know. And we need to, you know, start understanding, as a whole community, how do we start talking about user freedom? How do we reach out to more people and not necessarily just geeks. And I think a lot of you know that intuitively, but I thought I would say it, you know what I mean? Because I think we all have that thought. We're talking to more people than we ever did before. More people are understanding it. We have a diverse audience, and it's really great. So, and lastly, we wanted to thank XKCD. So this is the last panel of a comic on XKCD, which I think his site's xkcd.com. And he was kind enough to let us break up, I think it was a 6 or 8 panel webcomic into our bulletin this year. And we were able to sort of scatter it all the way out through the bulletin. And he's really, you know, this is, in a sense, another audience, this other way of talking to people that has just been great. And I'll leave you with that. Thank you for coming. Oh, yeah. Any questions? Matt, questions?
Yeah, questions.
Do we just stop?
If the problem with the Boston Public Library is where they get their audiobooks from, has anybody thought about trying to get them to buy their audiobooks from a different source? Maybe drive the offender out of business with competition?
Well, I imagine competitors have probably thought of that. But I guess I assume you mean some of the other DRM-free sources. I'm not sure. You know, I'm sure you thought of it, so yes. But I don't think that's a tactic that we want to take. You know, they have full staff that understand this issue, and we don't just want to affect the Boston Public Library. We want everybody, all libraries, to understand this issue and understand that they're driving the market and that they're making that choice against user freedom.
But the reason for keeping DRM is that it's profitable, and therefore it's important to make it not profitable.
But it's not profitable for libraries. It costs them a lot of money. And it's being shown by Random House and Penguin that it's not profitable except for these few. I think that as an organization, Matt and I's time and resources probably wouldn't be best spent trying to chase these business deals or make them happen, so much as inform people, you know, as effectively as possible about these issues across our campaigns. I think if we had like a huge staff and you know, or we had a really great volunteer base, or you yourself would like to take that on, we could work with you. And I think, you know, over the next couple of years, we can start to think about those things more. But right now, I think we're at a really great time where it's going in our direction. DRM is getting eliminated. We can keep at what we're doing for at least a little longer and see if it works. But that's a good suggestion. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
I think it's great to see you guys taking direct action to the streets, and I really like that a lot. I'm curious if you plan to do anything like lockdowns or banner hangs off the sides of buildings? That seems to be very effective with, say, Greenpeace or the Rainforest Action Network.
I agree that those are effective. I think it's about how much of a nuisance you want to portray yourself as, what you're trying to get out of it. So in the past, Greenpeace was very effective, and they took this multi-pronged strategy. They're a great example. You know, in the 60s, they went over to Europe with the Don't Make a Wave Committee, and they brought back a peace sign, right? And they would bring the peace sign, talking about nuclear disarmament, and you know, they used that as a group of journalists to really make a strong impact with a very small group. As they began to be more accepted and more understood widely, and they had a large following, a lockdown, you know, builds solidarity amongst supporters. It gets people angry. It builds that up. Right now, I think we're comparable to Greenpeace in a lot of ways as a young organization, launching these things they called mind bombs, you know, telling what the issue is, informing people for the first time about what's happening. And in the future, you know, I could very well see us doing a lockdown or something else and these sort of life or death struggles. And really, once we have that group of base of supporters. But Matt and I being in jail for a week, that would really hurt the campaigns team. So, and we wouldn't be able to continue informing people. Maybe we would, you know, maybe there would be a way to, you know, write for prison or something or jail.
Just need to make a call for volunteers willing to get arrested.
That's true, but I think it's if it's effective, you know. There's a really great book called Greenpeace: A History, and they talk about their early days, you know, these middle-aged journalists in Vancouver and in Canada, you know, really understanding how journalism worked, really understanding how images could affect things. And they would go and they would stand in front of something and be strong, but it was for that press. It was for that image. It was for that mind share to draw people in to explain the story. And we're doing a similar thing, you know. We're fortunately, with the internet and with, you know, low budget, low resources, without, you know, a sprawling network of journalists late in life that we had built up, you know, we're able to bring people in with our stark images, draw them in, get them to participate in solidarity, and then explain our story. You know, the same thing would happen. We would mark out what are our goals with this action if we're going to do a lock-in. You know, how effective is it going to be? I mean, it's cool, right? But, like, ultimately what we want is, how can we measure the effectiveness of this action? Is it going to work? Are we going to reach our goals? Are we going to be able to continue doing our work effectively? If the answer is yes, then, you know, I think we would. Or we would ask people to join us and do it. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any others?
I work at the Stoughton Public Library, and we have the same exact problem that the Boston Public Library does with OverDrive and the fact that we don't have a single free software anything in there, despite my constant complaining. Besides the Boston Public Library, how do we keep in contact with the smaller libraries as well, and how do we push them to adopt more free software?
Well, I mentioned only briefly. Yesterday, it's hard for us to go to conferences and things or spend much time out of the office because we can usually be more effective launching campaigns, taking advantage of that media, and not necessarily going and talking to people directly or individuals. But, you know, we sometimes go for that. And I did yesterday. I talked to the Library Association of the City University of New York. It's about 22 schools, I think. All librarians of those schools and their IT people, along with other smaller librarians throughout. You know, most of those are small schools, and it also drew in a lot of public libraries, some big, some small. And, you know, I talked to them not just about DRM. It was a very simple talk on user freedom, on free software, and then about DRM, about, you know, how they can benefit from free software. I was able to discuss some other things. They were hugely receptive. And they have actually had a couple install fests. They weren't necessarily able to get it, L-A-C-U-N-Y, Lacuny. They were able to have a few install fests of GNU Linux in the last few months. And it's not on their machines. They weren't able to convince IT. But they were able to do that activity in the library and get people doing it. And that's a great first step. You know, so you could consider doing something like that. And we'll continue doing our best to talk to librarians, informing them. And, you know, right now, this is how it happens, is by doing these actions, talking to people, you know, coming up with these ideas on how libraries can start doing it, and learning from librarians. I learned a lot yesterday, and I hope to, you know, that we can use that in the coming year. So hopefully you can help us. Just shoot us an email.
So you mentioned a couple of specific targets of the BBC and Netflix and the library.
Yep.
So who do you have in your sights now? Do you have a...
So we continue to have Microsoft in our sights. They haven't gone away. I keep expecting every year that they're just going to completely crumble and go away, and they keep doing something worse and... You all understand. I don't have to express it in words. Before I came here, I failed in launching an action against the Service Pack 1 that's being shipped right now. And, you know, we're going to be taking action against that. We're going to be continuing WITS Effective by Design on libraries on failing. Oh, sorry. Well, I was thinking about if we had any targets on Effective by Design. We have other campaigns, too. You know, we have this long list. And we're hoping that this year, with the remake of things like FSF.org, with a more sort of structured and a better sense of how to manage campaigns, we'll start bringing up and doing more with PlayOG, which hasn't had a lot of attention. Even Bad Vista's been struggling with attention. We're working with the End Software Patents Coalition and campaigning effort. You know, we work on the campaigning aspects of that. So I'm probably missing other campaign activities that we're doing. I apologize.
Is that GNU thing?
Huh? Yeah, there's the, you guys might have heard it. It's called the GNU Project, and so we're hoping to do a lot of work with that. It's a smaller one. Oops, sorry, GNU people. Yep, okay, last question.
Just as a quick feedback on the website, I would just say keep it fairly simple. Don't go heavy graphics, because some of us find that things like that are distracting. But the other thing is, generally I very much oppose DRM, but somehow I don't have as much trouble with it on library books. To me, it seems like analogous to when you're done reading the book, you return it to the library.
It's analogous.
Sort of, you know, I don't have as much trouble with it there because it's sort of doing the same sort of mechanism, but I can definitely say that 99% of the time I can definitely say it's keep up the good work.
Thanks for the suggestion. I'll leave it to Matt. He's the designer and mastermind behind some of these changes and working with people. I'm not good at that stuff. So I do think you're right in one thing with that. I agree with one part of your statement, which is it is analogous, this idea of that it's kind of like they're borrowing it. But it's not really. So remember, ideas around copyright have to do with making copies and sharing them, or just the act of making copies. It's a very different thing in the digital realm as it is in the physical realm. You know, it would be analogous to say, it would be equivalent, I would agree with your analogy, if when I went to open my physical book, 3 copies were made in cache and RAM that appeared before me, and other people could walk over and pick them up just as simply as I could. So the analogy starts to break down in a lot of ways. And the reason why that system came about was because of a certain trend in distribution and other things, and law. I don't think we should just try to force a system like the internet to suddenly be like a physical medium. If we did that in everywhere, you know, we'd all really be suffering. If we charged for every time we got a page or like a newspaper, it would be terrible. So I don't think we should treat it, you know, even though there is one analogy we can make, I don't think we should extend that analogy for the sake of restricting all users' freedom to try to keep it like it used to be. So we could, you know, there's more about this, and John's going to cover this in his next talk. It's a perfect intro. And there'll be time for more questions later. Thanks again. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh and Matt. There's something so disturbing, isn't there, about those yellow suits? I don't know what it is. Grown men in yellow suits. It's great. That's the aim. I just want to point out actually one other thing, of course. We've actually joined up this year with the Recording Industry versus the People, which is a Ray Beckerman. He's an attorney from New York. And because, you know, DRM is kind of a strange thing. It's not just the technology. It's the groups and organizations behind it. And the RIAA play a really important role in this. And so we're helping. We have a fund, actually, which we're raising money for. In fact, we've just made our first payment out to an expert computer witness who was successful in turning over an RIA case because, you know, they're really attempting to redefine copyright law. So the battle against DRM is really one about free software, and it stretches across, you know, this layer of technology we have. You know, so to use DRM, you have to use proprietary software. That's the problem, really, when it comes down to it. So anyway,